listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Hey everyone, just a quick reminder that if you're going to be making any purchases on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, or Zazzle.com, please go to www.9to5.cc first and click the links in the sidebar or at the bottom of the page to support the site. It makes no difference to you, but it really helps us out a lot. Enjoy the show. Thanks.
All right.
That's how we do it. Everybody's showing up. Walter, this is Go Plug Yourself.
How's it going?
I'm pretty good. We have a very special guest. We raised the bar.
Super special.
In terms of classiness.
This is the classy episode.
No more of these 20-year-old wannabe
comics.
No more
scuzzbag stand-up comics or random hobos off the street. Today,
exactly. Wannabe musicians.
Wannabe musicians.
Just
no.
Shitting on every guest we've ever had.
We have a bona fide artist on today's show.
That's taking away from all the other artists we've had.
It is, but I don't care.
All right.
Noted Montreal playwright, Vittorio Rossi. Vittorio, welcome.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. That was one hell of an introduction, I must say. I totally appreciate it.
Are you not used to this kind of treatment?
No, totally not. It's usually a little bit more less
aggrandizing.
No, it's more formal. Let's say
more formal.
This
is cooler. This is like I'm in the neighborhood.
Right.
You know?
Just your intro. We said shit and fuck.
We
introduced you.
Yeah.
So we're allowed to swear.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
I'm allowed to say damn, that kind of thing.
You could. Damn is okay. Damn
okay,
is all right.
Okay.
Try
you're
to keep
say
it.
Goddamn. Try to say GD instead.
Okay. Yeah. No. Okay. Please swear often and frequently, and a lot too. So a lot of credits to your name. You've worked on many plays, of course. Listeners who might know your work, might be familiar with your work.
I think it's notable to maybe say that he's predominantly a playwright.
Playwright, but also acts. And you had a central role in your last production of Paradise Down by the River.
Paradise by the River.
You messed that up again.
I'm gonna have to hit
Paradise
you. Seriously, hit you. You set it outside.
If you can slap him so it'll pick up.
I'm gonna seriously have to hit you.
You know what the problem is? I think in that review I was telling you about, I think the guy referred to it as Paradise Down by the River.
I know. I think it was just a Chris Farley thing. It's cool.
You think I'm mixing it up? Have you ever seen? Do you remember that old Saturday Night Live bit? Did you remember with Chris Farley? Remember that?
Yeah.
When you're gonna live in a van down by the river.
Yeah, right.
Keith is insinuating that I'm mixing up your epic play about, you know, Italian Montreal during World War
II
with Chris Farley.
That's like an honor, you know.
That's what you were going for this whole time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Frankly, what I did actually confuse it, and I never actually confused it with it, but while we're on the topic of confusing that play with other things, whenever I would like read that, when I was writing the review for it, every time I was only thinking of the Meatloaf song, you know, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights. I don't know why. It's like not even close. It's not even really that close to the title, but that was just, I think in your next play, you should maybe try to incorporate that. Paradise by the Dashboard Lights, the Meatloaf song.
Okay.
Or any Meatloaf, really.
Any Meatloaf.
Incorporate
any,
as much
okay.
Meatloaf music.
Are you a Meatloaf fan, Vittorio?
I like Meatloaf, yes.
The food or the artist or both?
Both.
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 Which
I
one
think.
More than the other?
When I'm hungry, the food.
The food.
If you had to choose.
It'd be weird if you wanted to hear Meatloaf the artist more when you were hungry.
Totally fucking weird, that's for sure. But I'd have to say... I like him, but yeah, I mean, he's not one of my top 10 favorites, no.
Okay.
But you won't change the channel if he comes on.
No. I mean, he's always engaging to watch. Right. He's a damn good singer. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And now, previous to Paradise by the River,
right?
There was the Carpenter trilogy before that.
Correct.
Which was also about Italian Montrealers.
Yeah.
Yes. This is a recurring theme in your work, is it not?
Yes.
Yes. And... I mean, amongst all the other credits and all these, like, sort of these acclaimed pieces of theater, you somehow managed to find time to appear in this little ditty, my personal favorite Vittorio Rossi effort, the 2003 TV film Nightlight, a.k.a. View of Terror.
Was that how it appeared in TV Guide? Was it Nightlight, a.k.a. View of Terror?
The official IMDb title is Nightlight, but then the DVD cover is View of Terror, and you start alongside none other than Miss Shannon Doherty, the lovely, the incomparable Shannen Doherty.
Of course, from
you know
Charmed
what?
And
she was very
fame.
Lovely.
She was very lovely.
She really was.
It was 2003. That was a good year for Shannen, I think.
I played a building superintendent or something, right? The manager. Or something.
I don't know. I couldn't watch more than 8 minutes of it.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but I do recall her being very nice. She was very nice, and she actually gave me nice compliments in terms of my acting. Yeah,
that's
even
good.
Though I probably did not care while I was doing it.
it was like a paycheck job.
It sounds like a paycheck job. Yeah.
Did you buy a boat with that? With that one? Was that your boat movie? Like you're like, I want a boat.
No, I didn't have enough days work.
You didn't get a boat with that one?
I think I bought a suit.
You bought a suit?
Nice.
Oh, that's nice.
So I could wear, like, you know, when I'm having meetings. Like,
that's good.
With people who make more money than me, you know?
Did I ever tell you the story about, you know the film Airplane?
Yeah, the original?
Yeah, the original
Leslie
Nielsen. But with the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar cameo. Right, because he plays one of the pilots.
Yeah, that's right.
And apparently they were like, they really wanted Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he was like, no. And then there was like an article in like Time Magazine where they had like what celebrities are shopping for and stuff like that. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was like, I really want this like $500,000 like Persian rug or whatever else like that. Or some shit. So they called him up and they were like, we will pay him the exact amount.
So he could buy the Persian rug.
And then Abdul-Jabbar was just sort of like, all right, I'm in. like he basically did Airplane for a rug.
For a rug. That's awesome.
For a rug that he wanted.
So I want to get back to Nightlife, a.k.a. View of Terror, for a second. Now, was this, as far as you can remember, was this a Canadian production?
Yeah, it was Canadian producers, absolutely.
Because I wasn't sure when I watched it, if it was a Canadian production or just bad.
Both, right.
Well,
Canadian productions tend to be bad.
Well, TV films and some films, right?
They're all fucking bad. They're stupid and ignorant.
Are we talking about the films or the makers?
Okay. Let's specify language first, okay?
Let me be very specific.
English language,
Canadian
film,
films. Right.
And TV, for the most part,
right,
is ridiculous.
Yeah, this is understandable. I agree with you.
They never built any sort of star system. So how do you promote your actors? How do you promote the product? How do you let your public excited to know that such so-and-so is in a show, in a movie, in a TV production, whatever? The French, unbeknownst to them, they probably don't even realize it, do it more like the Americans.
Right, yeah. Well, I bet it's at such a small sort of like contained.
Doesn't matter if it's small. It's just right. They do it right in England. They do it right in France. They do it right in Italy and Germany. Everywhere except English Canada. I don't know why. I think it's because of just sheer laziness and stupidity.
Well, also, I mean, it's like it's 30 million people spread across like a
but
huge
expanse.
But
size has nothing to do with it.
I think size has a little
really
bit to do
so.
With it.
Why does size have anything
just
to do
audience,
with promoting
audience size?
Yeah, but think about...
No, you're never going to beat the Americans. Neither will the Germans or neither will the Brits. Yeah. That's not the point. You could still promote them, though. You could still give your audience an identifying point in which to watch the film. If you say, why did I come see you the other night at doing your comedy? Because I've seen you before. So in my mind, you're like this rising star of the comedy world, like along with Guido Cocomello and Massimo and who's that kid from Toronto? Mark DeBonis. That in my eyes is like, well, these are young, rising comedic stars here in Montreal. So Guido calls me up. Hey, Walter's going to be here tonight. I'm hosting and Mark's in town and whatever. You know what? I'm going to come tonight. You know what I mean? That's the way it works. And why wouldn't it work for a film? But until you reach that point where you're headlining at Caroline's in New York, will you be making the same money? Probably not. But it doesn't matter. You still need to promote the star.
I think another big issue, though, is in terms of funding. I mean, the concept of government subsidized or like public funding really is almost non-conceivable in the States. Whereas here that's such a huge part of how these films get funded. So in the States you get a private entity, like the studio,
right,
that's backing these films. Whereas you know here you rely so much on grants on subsidies and whatnot. And I think that's sort of like sets sort of limits your artistic vision.
Yeah, because how far is the government going to go to fucking push your shit, right? If you get a private investor, the private investor has like a vested interest, because that's in the States, has a vested interest in it succeeding. Canada just gives the fucking money away and it's all a giant tax write-off.
I think now you're getting to the root of the problem. Yeah. First of all, if the government says, here's $500,000 for your $3 million movie,
they're not going to give you more to
No, but they don't have a say. I don't think they get involved in how you want to do, how you're going to shoot the film or promote it.
Yeah.
But there's just something wrong. Like, I don't think it's the government's fault. I think the people, first of all, the people in charge of handing out this money, that's another problem too.
Right.
I've been involved in a couple of processes with Telefilm Canada, and if the public knew what is being done with their taxpaying money, with their money, there would be demonstration just like with these fucking students.
Well, did you hear about the thing? It's not about film and television, where Harper was cutting the funding to something up in like Labrador or whatever else like that. That the entire base, it's like a science thing, costs about $1 million a year to run.
Right.
However, he's paying $10 million to have, like, two pandas come to some, like, Canadian zoo or whatever else like that for 6 months that we have pandas or some shit.
Right.
And I was like, okay, so I really want these pandas in this fucking zoo, so we're going to shut down a research station that with the money from the pandas you could keep running for 10 years.
Right.
You know, and I think it's a lot of the government spending like that just doesn't fucking make a lick of sense.
A lot of it doesn't
Where
make
they
sense.
Put money into shit that they... Or I guess someone perceives as like a better buy, but not the shit that maybe people actually would want. You know, like I think that crosses over into like all government spending, and then you sort of
certainly
in the arts. I'm sure.
To me, it's just very simple. The people at just no one's really paying attention.
Right.
That's the bottom line. It's just like if you're handing over money, whether it's Mr. Coca-Cola or wherever you go get the money or government. Like, don't you want to know how it's being spent? And aren't you interested at all in the result of the movie? Or are we just another is it just another welfare program to employ some fucking directors and make some producers rich, you know, because they get their share right off the top of the, you know.
Right. Yeah, sure. Regardless as to whether the film's
regardless,
yeah.
Regardless,
well,
the
UA Bull model, right?
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. What I would do is I would stop trying to even make a film that's even over $5 million, which is low anyway, and just give young guys give them $500,000 each. They'll get you with all the technology we have now doing stuff digitally. Just give more of that out, and they'll come up with.
They'll go find a
small plane.
I could do
shoot
a shit ton with $500,000.
If you gave me $500,000 right now, I could get a team together in 2 weeks.
Two weeks?
Yeah, shoot a film.
You heard it here, Canada.
You heard it first, kid.
$500,000. We're going to be making a film. Written and produced
by Vittorio
Rossi.
That's what it's called, too. Vittorio Rossi's $500,000 movie.
Fuck yeah. Oh, shit. Well, am I allowed to say
that? Yeah, please.
No, but it's... Like, when I go see a shitty movie, like, the first thing I always do is take a look, go online, and I check the budget, and I check its box office.
Right.
Like, how it performed. Because I'm always like, how the fuck... Like, how much money did it take to make this piece of shit?
Right.
And how well did it do? When we watched that fucking... The Guy Pierce Prison Break in Space movie...
Oh, wow, right. Yeah. We did watch that.
Yeah, we did watch that. With, like, a $25 million budget, it looked like fucking three scripts were shoved together.
Sure.
Nobody was acting in it. Like, they even knew what character was across from them. Like,
right.
None of the performances made sense. Special effects looked pretty shoddy. And
some of them were okay.
Some of them were all right.
Yeah.
And the script looked like was a fucking mess. And then it was like $25 million made 50. And you're like, what the fuck happened?
And this came from where?
And this was Hollywood.
Hollywood.
But the other thing is with a lot of these movies is that you're just looking at the box office. You're just looking at the straight up box office numbers, but the numbers you're not seeing is the money they're making off of selling the foreign distribution rights.
Oh yeah,
selling
for sure.
This and that. You don't see that.
It's usually up.
Yeah,
like,
and then
you go see like a good movie, and then you look at it, and then it's the opposite, where you see like a really great movie made on $2 or $3 million, and then it made $500,000 or something, and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah, look, don't get me wrong, like If you were to essentially group, your three major artists,
okay,
that get a film done. I'm not talking about now, you know, your set designers and your
right.
your costumes. I'm just talking about your three major, which are your director, your actor, your actors, and your writers. Of those three, in Canada, in terms of just generally speaking, the level of talent from the actors is miles and miles ahead of your average Canadian director and average Canadian screenwriter. That's the problem that Canadian actors face. We do have terrific actors and actresses. They're giving shit to fucking act.
And then they go to the States.
Yeah,
exactly. But there are some who still are here and choose to be here because for whatever reasons. They just prefer the country or
right.
whatever. And then when they got to go out to work in L.A. or New York, they do so. But that's been the problem from the beginning, is the talent of the actors is way ahead of the scripts they're given. And then the directors, to me, it's a toss-up. I don't know who's worse. Is it your average Canadian director or your average Canadian screenwriter? I don't know. I could tell you as an actor, when I've acted in some of that stuff, I don't get this. This is ridiculous. This is not what I signed up for when I was a theater student.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, you're playing Detective Number 9 or something. You couldn't give him a fucking name?
You were in something else. What was the CBS? I'm sorry. I love your I love your film credits. What was the CBS show that you were briefly in? That had a brief run.
Urban Angel.
Urban Angel. Yes.
That had promise.
How long? What was when was that on the air around?
Oh my God! I think that was like 91 or 92.
Really?
We did.
Keith, why don't you pull up Urban Angel?
We did six episodes in one season, hoping it would be picked up.
And that
it
was,
got picked up for nine more episodes. When CBS came in, and CBC just dropped it.
It was another Canadian production, though, right?
Oh, yeah. It was shot here. It was one of the first in a long time to be shot here, one-hour drama.
Right, that got picked up by an American.
Vancouver. Yeah.
Oh, it was shot in Montreal.
It was shot in Montreal,
right.
Produced by the late Robin Spry. He was a good man. He was a good producer.
Yeah. You haven't really done much in terms of screen acting in some time, right?
Well, the last film I acted in was called The Timekeeper. That was fun. That was starred Roy Dupuis.
Okay.
We shot that out in Sept-Îles.
Okay.
Sept-Îles, Quebec. I had to grow a beard and the whole thing. That was a nice film. That was it was based on a novel by Trevor Ferguson.
Okay.
About these railroad workers in Slave Lake, but we actually shot it in Quebec, and it was a wonderful experience. And that was like 4 years ago, I believe.
Okay.
That was my last acting gig on film. Yeah.
But you've also been typecast. Like, I mean, you get like little bit roles here and there, and you've gotten those. And that's like, and I think, not to be insensitive here, but that's based on the heritage, right?
Yeah, well, they don't know any better. I mean, they'll say, okay, Vittorio
Rossi. The guy's name is Vittorio Rossi. He's thug number four,
it's
right?
Stupid.
Yeah,
yeah,
but that's happened, right? Yeah. You have gotten a couple of those, right?
Oh, I've done a few of those.
Yeah. Were you not? No. Well, I don't know if you – okay, because you told me about something once, and it was really interesting, but I don't know if we can talk about it here if you don't want to talk about this, Keith can cut it out later. Is that true, Keith?
It's a pain in my ass to cut shit out. Well,
okay,
you know, all
right.
What,
okay.
The fact that I'm actually not Italian?
No, you are Italian.
Oh, yeah.
No, but the thing that you told me about that one time that you were working on adapting for the screen, and you were doing a, like, based on a very popular novel here. On,
oh yeah, yeah.
Is that
yeah,
are you
yeah.
still are you still not allowed talking about that, or do you know? Do you know? Are we talking about the same thing now?
We're talking about.
This is really good for the listeners, by the way.
Is this you're talking about the? Are you talking about the book I was hired to adapt?
Yes.
For Denis Arcand?
Yes. Are you still? You can't. Can you?
Well, it's not like I'm not allowed to talk.
But
about
I remember
listening.
Is it still in development, or is that?
No, it's dead.
It's dead. Okay.
It's dead, yeah.
Well, so yeah. So what was that? That was.
Well, there's an interesting case there. We had, a very fine and established producer, Denise Robert.
First of all, can we say that the title of the...
Oh, the book was called, and the screenplay as well, is called The Timekeeper. No, sorry.
No.
That's the one I acted in.
Yeah, that was the one you were in.
What the hell was... The Dishwasher.
The Dishwasher.
The Dishwasher. Right. Based on a novel by Danny Martin.
Okay.
Who had spent time in jail. Actually, when the few occasions I spoke to him, he was still serving time
in
L.A.
Still on the can.
Yeah, at the time. You're going back now, oh my God, 1999,
right.
2000,
when this
was happening. Yeah. And I thought it was an interesting book. It was about a bank robber who wants to redeem himself and do well and do good, and had a very engaging character. And the story was very exciting. So I write this. I write my first draft. I hand it in to Denis Arcand and Denise Robert, and we start doing notes and stuff like that. And I just kept doing draft after draft. And at one point, I'll never forget, Denis Arcand said, "You know what, Vittori, this is not really right for me as a director, because it was meant for him to direct."
Right.
So
off the bat, though, that seems kind of like an odd project for Arcand to take on. Denis Arcand, do you know who Denis Arcand?
Yeah, he's probably our best
Denis Arcand
director.
Is the Barbarian Invasion.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Fall of the American Empire.
Jesus of Montreal. He's probably our best.
Like whenever he does something, he gets nominated for like an Oscar, like in the foreign language category. Yeah,
well,
like
he won.
For
Barbarian Invasions. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a big deal. So doing this like
this is
a gangster
thing.
This was
a story. No. Again, the story. The mob had a small part of the story.
Okay.
To me, the story felt like this urban, or I should say, modern Western,
right.
It had that kind of feel to it. Anyway, he says now, at the time, well, this really isn't this is not right for me to direct. And I said, okay, I guess we're done. I mean, I was paid as a screenwriter, and said, no, we'll just find another director. Now, you got to remember, at that point, we had already met dozens of times over what to keep from the book and, what elements he'd like to see and that sort of thing. So he got to know how I work and how my thoughts on films and storytelling, that whole thing. So they said, yes, so we'll just find another director. At that point, at the meeting, I just said, well, who are you going to get? Where are we going to go get this director? And I believe Denise Robert, the producer, had said, well, we'll find somebody here or somebody in Canada. At which point I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, it's good. I said, I'm not interested. I said, I've been paid, so you can do what you want with the script. I said, well, what do you mean? You're not interested, I said, look, this story has violence. Not violence that just comes out of nowhere. Most of the violence is based on your main character defending himself and exacting vengeance on someone he cares for who was harmed, a little girl.
So it's inherently violent.
Oh, yeah. And what I loved about the screenplay is that all the violence that the main character, whose name was Bill Malone, all the violence he did was all with his hands. There was no weapon, no guns, nothing.
So he just beat the hell out of
him. He was just this tough Irish motherfucker who just knew how to fight,
It's kind of cool also, because it's just like...
It was very cool. It was very interesting.
Because it also means that it wasn't even like premeditated. It's not like he brought a weapon to the encounter.
No.
He just... And like I said,
this is a
man...
This is a character that spent 15 years in prison and who spent all that time, just saying, okay, let's cleanse. Clean out here. Mm. The author described his body as having the physique of a swimmer.
Right.
And who's become very stoic. Very, zen, very, almost Buddha-like, just very calm. But then something happens to this little girl he befriended.
Right.
Who's raped and
violently
beaten. And he exacts all that stuff he's been suppressing just comes out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Reminds me of Driven.
Exactly. So there's violence inherent in the screenplay. So getting back to so I said, well, there's violence in this movie. And I personally don't. I have not seen any Canadian director who knows how to handle it, knows how to capture it properly.
Cronenberg does violence very well.
He does it well now, yeah. Oh, wait, in History of Violence, it was... Yes, absolutely. Yeah. At that point, yes. But this was before a history of violence. Right. I couldn't really... His name is not one
so
that
So you couldn't use
up.
That as a point of reference? No,
exactly.
It was just The Fly at that point.
Right. So my hero in terms of of film violence capturing is Scorsese.
Scorsese, right. Okay.
Okay.
What did you say?
I was going to say Peckinpah. I was going to go Peckinpah. That's
Peckinpah, too.
That's more Western violence.
That's more, yeah. But I just love the way Scorsese captures Vaughn because it makes it.
Yeah, the beatings are great.
Real.
Yeah,
they're awesome.
Nobody does a beating like Scorsese does a beating.
Oh, you know, even if you go back to one of his earlier films, like Mean Streets, there's
right.
fights in the cars.
Oh,
yeah.
This is the way this is the way it happened. It gets messy and stupid, you know? Nobody's fucking Bruce Lee in these bars, you know what I mean? Anyway. So I get up off my feet at the meeting and I start describing these shots and how I would do it. And how there's no directors here I've seen who can handle that.
Get Scorsese!
Well, the beauty about working with someone like Denis Arcand is open-mindedness.
Right.
And at one point, he just stopped and said, you know what, Vittorio? I think you should direct this film. I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. I said, okay, yeah. Absolutely.
That's not coming from nobody. It's Denis Arcand.
It's Denis Arcand, exactly.
You know, like, he wouldn't just be
so
like,
immediately, Denis Robert thought it was a great idea, and I said, okay, what do we do now? Well, we energize and just go and raise money based on this new reality.
Okay.
And Denis said, well, I will be there to back you up every step of the way. So the meetings begin, and that's where it all starts to fall apart with Telefilm.
Right.
I remember at the meeting, and bear in mind, when you're at these meetings, you have a group of four or five people. You have your head referee, I guess. I don't know what the fuck he was there for. And then you had your one person whose goal there was to ask questions of your director and screenwriter, which was me.
Right.
And someone who's there to ask questions of the producer. So that was where Denise Robert... questions she had to answer. And at this meeting, even our DP, our very prominent DP, Guy Dufault, who shoots all of Denis Arcand's films, he was there in support too. And I remember, and by the way, getting Guy Dufault on board, even Denis Arcand himself did not think I could get him.
Right.
They said, well, it's not the kind of film I think he would photograph.
Right.
I said, you know what? Set up the meeting. Let me handle it. So a meeting was set up. And, you know, here's this very prominent, even at that time, you know, Zoo La Nuit by the late Jean-Claude Lauzon, whatchamacallit, Jesus of Montreal.
Right.
The Decline of the American Empire. Yep. He shot all those films, right?
Yeah.
So here he is, sits down. We're at the meeting, and I say to him, I said, what do you think of the script? He goes, yeah, you know.
It's not bad.
Not bad. Yeah. You could tell, you know, here's the pro with this young up-and-coming, you know, wannabe fucking director with
an
Italian fucking name, right?
Yeah.
So I just cut to the chase. I said, Guy, are you familiar with Westerns? Now, you could tell this, whoa, he didn't see that coming. I said, he goes, yes, which ones? I named three in particular. I said, High Noon,
yeah.
The Searchers, and Shane.
Good ones. So now, which now, okay, so one, a couple of those.
You're
one
have a
is
Western aside?
What's that?
Are you going to have a Western aside?
No, but that's those. A couple of those are one of the, at least one of those is a Ford picture.
The Searchers is Ford.
Searchers is with John Wayne. Yeah.
Shane is with Alan Ladd.
Right.
And High Noon is with Gary Cooper.
Okay.
And I said, yeah, you just named three classics.
Right.
I said, yeah, I know I did. I said, well, what's your point? I said, that's how I see the script. I mean, look at it. Your main character, man who comes out of prison, wants to do good, wants to put all this violent past behind him until something happens, which, you know, that's what Alan Ladd does in Shane. That's,
right.
You know, it's this, I said, that's the approach I want to take. Obviously, we're not going to have horses and stuff because it's set in modern times. But that's the feel, the look I'd like to see. These nice long shots. So when we see, for instance, Bill Malone entering the small town to settle into the new room he's going to live at, you know, instead of doing your typical close-ups and all that, no, let's see him walk down this highway until he turns into the Star Motel, it was called in the book, you know? And just like you would see Alan Ladd
as
he approaches the farm and the little kid, you know? Same, that type of thing. Now he's in awe. He's like, wow, I love this approach. He goes right to Denis Robert. He says, I'm in. This guy knows exactly what he's talking about. And I was very encouraged by that.
Well, yeah, again.
Who wouldn't be, right? You have Denis Arcand, you have Guy Dufault. Who wouldn't be encouraged by that?
Yeah.
So now we go to telefilm, and it means fuck all to them.
This what were they looking for?
Probably Martin Scorsese.
Probably Martin Scorsese. Yeah. So what happens? So what happens? You go to telefilm.
This was one of the questions I was asked. Now, there was a character in the movie, the mob part of the movie, called there was a character named Freddy Sandino. And this is the question, one of the questions I was posed. And it was, and the question was, if Freddy Sandino is such a feared mobster, why is he serving beer at his own bar? I paused, and in my mind, I'm thinking, you fucking cunt, you stupid idiot. Are you fucking serious?
It's like, why is Paul Sorvino
said,
a butcher?
That
in
somehow takes
like,
away his power.
Yeah. Like,
are you fucking serious?
All these guys, like, I mean,
how many times have I been next door at Grumpy's and Jimbo goes, Vito, hey, look who's here, Vittorio, glass of wine. He might be at the bar and he just pours it.
Yeah.
That takes away Jimbo's power from Comedy Works. Are you fucking serious?
No, and in Goodfellas, like Paul Sorvino is still working as like a
all
butcher.
The time,
yeah,
that's
he's
what
like,
I'm
he's
saying.
Cooking and stuff.
The
yeah,
guy, the guy in Boardwalk Empire too.
So I
the butcher in Boardwalk Empire.
So
it's like
I said,
it's normal.
Yeah. So
that's almost a trope, actually.
These guys all hold down
it's
like jobs.
It's almost a trope from mob movies.
But yeah, so
like,
I had to be
close.
Calm, stay calm, and I'm like, I'm thinking, wow, I thought you guys were film aficionados here. You never saw Goodfellas?
Yeah.
You never saw Main Street?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I said, so I was very calm and I said, okay. I said, we're not talking about the Corleones here.
Yeah.
We're talking about a mob on a street level. Yeah. So that's what they do. They run these bars or restaurants.
Yeah,
they're all clandestine.
They're hoods.
And they will show up.
Yeah.
Hey, Walter's in town. Look what's happening. Yeah, you're doing some comedy. Hey, give this guy a drink. That's what they do.
Right.
And it makes them look good. It makes them look nice. And I said, besides which, it's the way it is in the script, and I liked it.
Yeah.
But just the absurdity of the question was unbelievable.
It's like they got fixated on this point.
But that's not where it ends. I remember I had to give in this, as for this meeting, I had to give in a very long paper.
Sorry,
about,
do you want another drink, by the way?
Sure, why not? Yes. What the hell, it's Thursday. And
it's almost the weekend. It's only the early afternoon.
And my director's approach thing.
Right.
I said, oh, my God. Okay, so here we go. So I describe how I would approach shooting this film, directing this film, like that whole Western analogy, all that stuff. Doesn't someone at the meeting go, Vittorio, can you describe for us how this Western thing would work? Like describe, let's take a scene here and how would you shoot it? That's when you could tell Guy Dufault had enough. Again, he was very gently, very calm. And he just politely said, look, what Vittorio wrote there is a way of working. We're not at that point yet where we go scene by scene.
Exactly, yeah. You don't have this thing storyboarded yet.
I see this very darkly lit with just a little stream of blue light maybe. And you know, and blah, blah, blah. We're not there yet.
No.
This is just what he would approach, how he would approach the whole film. We're not at that point where we're designing the shots. So think about what I'm just describing to you. These are fucking idiots that are deciding on millions of dollars on who gets money to shoot Canadian film.
Yeah.
Now, why doesn't the public know this? Why don't they broadcast these fucking meetings?
Based on the aesthetic preferences of like four guys.
Yeah, exactly.
And my defense is, well, Vittorio wasn't experienced enough. And my defense is, You have nothing to lose, you idiots. Your films are not succeeding anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you have to lose? Give it a shot.
Yeah.
Try it.
Yeah. At the very least, it might be critically acclaimed.
So to me, it's a broken system. And you know, God bless people like Denis Arcand, who showed the faith and had the faith. Denise Robert, same thing. But the project just
died. Yeah, but what system is Arcand working on? Arcand's working in the Quebec system.
Oh, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah.
Different.
I just want to say, was kind of really.
Was there too much swearing?
No, that was just the right amount of swearing.
Yeah, believe me, we've
really.
We've had filthy words.
I have three sisters, man. I mean, they're gonna be very. I'm the baby in the family.
That's all right.
They'll be fine.
Don't worry about it. What I thought was funny is while you're going on this whole anecdote and talking and name dropping Martin Scorsese and stuff, even though he wasn't directly involved with that anecdote, was that in the background? I don't know if this will come through in the podcast.
You got
music and stuff playing here. Like Louis Prima's playing while you're telling this story. about guys getting beatings and Scorsese. I'm like, really? Now's when the Prima's going to come on?
That shit.
But there you go. There you go.
That blows my mind.
I still think to this day, although it was not my original story, I still think to this day of the few screenplays I've written that have yet to be produced, that was one of the stronger ones. And it's a shame. It's just a damn shame that it couldn't move forward.
Yeah. I went to a Q&A with J. Michael Straczynski, the guy who wrote Changeling, but he also writes a lot of like sillier side projects. Like he also wrote Ninja Assassin, you know. So it's like because he like flip flops back and forth, being like he hammered out Ninja Assassin apparently in like 2-3 days, whereas like obviously award winning, Oscar winning thing like Changeling, well that's like a bigger process, you know. So he's like Ninja Assassin's like cleansing his palate, and he was just talking about he's in like the same boat where. He's like worked enough now that he can just walk away from stuff if it's not going right. But he's like, I'm like J. Michael Straczynski. He's like with fucking Oscars under my belt, TVs under my belt, whatever. And he's like, I still get dicked around in the boardroom.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and he was just sort of like, only he's like, I'll just get up and walk out. Because he's like, no, I'll work with someone who wants to work with me as opposed to. And it's like, so it's sort of like really depressing to me that it doesn't matter what you do, that the system is still sort of like, and that's the American system too. They're just people who are just these guys who aren't writers, aren't even really producers, aren't directors, aren't actors, who are making the call as to where the money goes. So you're like, wait, why the fuck do you decide where the money goes? Like, where's your authority to make this decision? Fucking blows my
look,
mind.
Look, I guess, in our, you know, Western society, I guess, there's probably no way to work around it. I mean, you're going to have to deal with people who are in charge of money.
Yeah,
I just thought that because in our system it's essentially government money, it is, that there would that if you know your movies are failing at the box office,
and
a lot of them just fail artistically, then just use it as a fucking education system, man. Okay, who's next? Vittorio here. Let's give him a shot.
Yeah, throw him a bone. Let's see what happens.
Like, you have nothing to lose. You're throwing this money away anyway.
it's just so stupid.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I know what you are saying.
If this bar we're at right now, Ireland decides, fuck it, no more beer for Canada, right?
I'm with you so far.
Okay.
I'm following. I'm thinking.
I know where he's going.
Terrible scenario.
No, and you can only and whatever beer country says no more beer for Canada.
Right.
And then I come around. Listen, try some Italian beer. It's not as good, not as strong, but just give it a shot. I mean, just give it a fucking shot.
You don't got Irish beer anymore. What else are you gonna have?
Well, we excel in the wine thing.
Right. Well, I've had Italian beer. Italian beer is pretty good.
It's okay.
It's not bad. There's a couple good ones.
I'm just trying to make a point that you have nothing to lose.
Right.
Like, if you're this route is not working, you're not promoting your actors, you're not, you don't know how to even make suggestions to, like, to improve the scripts.
Right.
All of that seems to be failing.
Yeah.
So, why don't you just go to the theater? And look at some talented actors and playwrights. They might have some answers for you.
Yeah, for sure. And on top of that, too, they're probably used to getting shit done on a shoestring budget and could probably do it for less money than you thought that they could do.
Look, here's another thing, too, that pissed me off as an actor, right? On film.
Right.
A again, the audience doesn't have to know this. Like, they may not be aware or whatever. But basically, what you have when you're setting up a scene are three essential shots. You have what you call your master shot, which is essentially geography. It's about where are we.
Right.
So, for instance, if we were shooting this scene right now, as he gives you a glass of
thank you, sir.
I assume it's water, a pint of vodka.
Right?
Yeah, a pint of vodka.
Okay. So we want to tell the audience we're in this bar. So you're probably going to have your camera as far away from us as possible so you get an idea. You can see the setting.
Yeah.
And usually those shots are kept for 2 or 3 seconds. Ah, right. We're at the bar.
Also known as establishing shots.
Establishing shots, okay? Master shots, whatever.
Maybe a shot from the outside. Same possibly. Whatever they do.
Whatever, exactly. Yeah. You see me entering. Yeah. Hey, guys, are you ready for the interview? And say, okay. That's usually kept for a few seconds unless there's some dialogue, whatever. Then your next shot is you start moving in closer. So you have your, I guess we sometimes call them medium shots, you know, yeah. Then you go in for your close-ups.
Right.
You can have them over each other's shoulders, or you can have them nice and clean if it's an important line, like, you say that again, I am going to fucking kill you. You know, maybe you want a clean close-up of
Vittorio
me.
Just locked eyes with me when he said that, and I got to shit my pants
intense,
a little bit.
Eh? Okay? So, after years and years of shooting like this, I'm like, all right, are we fucking retarded here? This is all they're doing.
Yeah.
You don't need a director for that, because God knows I'm not getting direction.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like I'm saying, Vittorio, maybe you want to play the scene a little calmer. It'll show you have more power. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I'll play it calmer. Absolutely.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Vittorio, maybe, you know, if you could just try a little humor. Let's just see. Yeah. Maybe it'll make the scene a little scarier sometimes, you know. No, all you get is... No, more to your left, more to your right. There's something on your
left.
It's
stage direction.
It's literally. So my point being, your director of photography can do that.
Or the second unit director.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Your fucking makeup artist can do that. You don't need a director for that.
Vittorio, you're not in the shot. Just go 2 feet to your left.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now,
I'm a director.
Tape on the floor could do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you take a film that had very little money. Very, very little money.
Porky's.
No, right, I'm not going Porky's. That far. I'm using a really good example here. Sling Blade by Billy
Bob.
Sure.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Wrote, directed it, made him won the Oscar for screenwriting.
Yeah.
And he could have easily won that year as best actor, but he was beaten out by, what's his name, Shine.
Jeffrey Rush.
I mean, the apples and oranges. They were
good,
both
good performances.
Yeah, exactly. But look back at that film. Go back and look at that film, okay? And I would say 90% of that film is essentially all master shots. There's no cutaways. Very, very, very little. So I've never met Billy Bob. I'd love to. If he could say, Billy, I would say this. Can you just give me 5 minutes? I will buy you whatever you like, drink, coffee, dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even have to be there.
Right.
I just want to ask you just 5 questions, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of thing, but my guess is he shot that way because of the limited budget he had.
Probably, I mean,
yeah.
Okay. It could be like an artistic choice influenced by the budget.
Yeah, well, there was a
absolutely well said. You said it, yeah, better than I could have. Yeah.
There's a book.
My second language, English, right? We're clear on this, right?
There's a book called like How to Make Your First Film for like less than $10,000 or whatever by this guy who's made like a couple of them with like really shoestring budgets. And he was like one of the first things he talks about. He sees like which locations do you have access for free?
Yeah,
you know. And it was just sort of like exactly that's it. Like if I were to make a movie, guaranteed Grumpy's would be a location. Because you know what, I could probably get in here after 3 o'clock at night, whatever. It would be dark out. You throw some lights on. You don't know that the bar is closed, and it'd be next to nothing. And it was just sort of like suddenly there's this like writing your shots around it. I watch a lot of horror movies. Walter and I both do.
Love them.
The first Feast movie, they had an abandoned bar that they could tear up. And they were just sort of like, well, then our entire movie is set in this abandoned bar.
There you go.
We can spray blood on the walls. We can hack holes in the walls. We can break anything that's in here and whatever else. So it's like, you don't... If you know that going into the project, you're like... You write your entire script around this one bar. And you're like, okay, you know what? Maybe it would be nice to have a shot of people in there. No, we don't have an apartment. Fuck it. So you're not going to write that into the script. And it's like you, kind of what you're saying, where if you're writing around, not writing around it because you're not necessarily looking for it, you just know that the whole thing is going to be shot in one location, you can like work with it and make a good fucking single location.
You but, certainly
like,
can.
Like Glengarry Glen Ross is like the prime example.
Oh, beautiful.
Fucking amazing fucking movie, single location.
There's even a more extreme example of one location than Glenn, because Glengarry does sort of open up a little bit.
Like that one shot outside where he's trying to
at the restaurant.
Yeah,
at the beginning,
yeah.
And when Jack Lemmon goes to see that client someone's house there.
I saw it.
It opens up a little bit.
I saw it done on stage once, where the only place on stage was the office. They didn't have the restaurant scene. When he saw the client, the actors actually came down into the area in front of the stage. So, like, they came out from the side. Oh, that was really cool.
Right, yeah. But like, the more extreme example in a movie I always use as an example is the classic 12 Angry Men.
That is literally
one fucking room.
Yeah.
It's the jury room.
You
that's
could
it.
Almost, and if you were, like, ballsy, you could fucking do that with one. Like, you could probably do 12 Angry Men in a single shot.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you were, like, really fucking
That would take a lot of rehearsing. But
yeah,
exactly.
Doable.
It's definitely doable.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, like Rope. Have you ever seen Rope?
Rope, same thing.
Rope is done in an apartment. It's one shot. It's not technically one shot because they didn't have the technological means to do it. But it's meant to be one shot.
Yeah.
Like the only reason with Rope that it's not one shot is because they didn't have enough. The reels of film weren't long enough.
I think they ran like 9 minutes.
So they would transition across like a dark shirt or something, and they would use that up.
It would just look anyway.
It's pretty awesome though.
But the reason why I mentioned Sling Blade is that okay?
You have to drink water through a straw, Walter.
Yes, we could have the crew set up a shot, whatever time they need. Usually it takes some time, 2-3 hours. Your lights, get the actors ready, the whole thing. And then, because of budget constraints, we could rush it in 2-3 takes and then move on to the next location.
Yeah.
Or, the way Billy Bob Thornton did it, says, well, we don't have anywhere to rush off to. We got about a couple hours to get this scene right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, when you're limited with budget, why don't you just shoot that way?
Yeah,
of course.
That film was a total success. It put him on the map in a big way as an actor. He was already sort of known as a screenwriter. People forget that. But, Mike, do you see my point?
Especially now with digital, right? Like,
because
like originally those things where if you read Robert Rodriguez when he made El Mariachi, like 85% of the budget of El Mariachi was his film stock. He's like, I've seen interviews with him now where he's just sort of like, now that you're shooting digital, he's like, just fucking take 100 takes.
Absolutely.
If everybody's down for it, he's like, because you can just, you're not wasting film. He's like, if you're wasting film and that's part of your budget, he's like, that's kind of a different thing. But he's like, now that the digital cameras are getting,
it's not an issue anymore.
Getting to be wary, he's like anybody where, what do they call it? The Nikon, whatever. Nikon has a camera where you can throw a wide angle lens on it and you can buy it for, I think, like $2,000, $3,000.
Yeah.
They filmed entire episodes of House, TV show on it.
Oh, really?
And they were just sort of like, and you cannot tell. Like, you have absolutely no idea that the camera is sitting there. No. Like, $2,000, $3,000 cameras. That's expensive. But, like, if the three of us decide to pull in and buy a couple of cameras, we're at less than $10,000, we could have three of these things, you know?
Absolutely.
And we grab some tripods and we're all set. And they're just talking about, like, the cost of physical production has gone down, that you start to fucking throw open the idea of, like, taking your time and whatever else like that, because you've cut costs all over the place in terms of making physical stuff, because like there's no more reels of tape, there's no more whatever else like that. You're like, you just need a fucking hard drive to put it on.
No, I know. So, look, I remember you mentioned the TV series I was in as a
Urban Angel.
Urban Angel.
I remember there was an episode,
the episode that I'm actually credited of writing. I was asked by the late, great Robin Spry to give them an episode for season 2, and I did. And, of course, their editors totally fucking rewrote. I think 2 lines were kept, but I still get the credit. Okay, it was the deal.
And the checks keep pouring in for that episode,
I saw maybe 12 cents over there.
Yeah, no, I mean, Vittorio came in a limo today, and it's like Urban Angel money.
He was like, you want to record the podcast in the bar or the limo, you know? Like one of the two.
Urban Angel money.
In that episode... The character that was my cousin, my character's cousin, who I find out in the episode is involved in the importation of drugs through my uncle's shoe store.
Right, as they frequently are.
Of course, yeah, it's right. Italian. I mean, yeah. You know, they're all fucking.
No, I mean just drugs coming in through shoe stores.
I mean, yeah.
Got to watch out for those shoe stores. You know those little things that they have in the boxes there that it says like don't open the pouch.
Silica gel.
I don't think it's always silica gel though.
Walter, you motherfucker! That was.
Is that actually what they were doing?
That was the genesis of the idea because I was a shoe salesman for 6 years, and I said,
amazing.
"Wow! You mean to tell me no one's thought of importing drugs through these packets?"
Well, think about it. There's only one packet per box. It'd be the most inefficient way to transport drugs ever.
Well, every tenth box would be a box of silica gel, which is actually
just drugs. A box full of silica
we're
gel. Yeah,
away secrets here. Right?
I know.
Okay. I see officers right now.
Yeah.
Coming into anyway. My point is, in this episode...
This isn't a podcast, it's a thing.
In this episode, my character's cousin is blown up in a van.
Uh-huh.
And while it's burning, my character's name was Dino Maroney, is running to try and get him out there, but, you know, and the main character stops before him. It's too late, he's dead.
Right.
Like, you're just going to get burnt. But, you know, it's my cousin, you know the way, it's an emotional thing.
Yeah.
And the night we shot it, I remember I worked so hard to try and get that to that state my cousin's in there and I need to go help him.
Right.
He might be dead
burning
or whatever.
Burning to death in a silica-related accident.
Right.
It wouldn't really
my
be silica,
point is,
it would be the drugs.
They never got a close-up. They never even got a medium shot.
Just a wide shot the whole time.
Pretty much.
So,
and
oh,
I'm
my
like,
God.
Wow. I said, this is the kind of moment that you need to get a little closer because it registers with the audience more than just action. Now you're seeing how much, oh my God, I just saw my cousin blow up.
Yeah, yeah.
So who's at fault there? Why wasn't that shot made? Why, you know, I'm just an actor. I was just, at that point, I'm just an actor.
You're working on Urban Angel.
So you see my point?
You think, like, you think you're part of a quality project, and you get some jerk-off DP.
I believe the term is jerk-off.
I'm just saying, like over the years, okay, don't think for a minute, because this is another defense I have, okay? If I'm not mistaken, Dances with Wolves is the first film Kevin Costner has directed, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. Sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely the first one he had any acclaim for.
So as an actor, previous to that film, he was on some pretty good films, well, you know, Field of Dreams.
Yeah, he did have a good early run. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The baseball,
Field of Dreams, the baseball.
He did a couple baseball movies. The Natural.
No, that was
Redford. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Costner was certainly like I can't.
Oh my God, how can we not? With Susan Sarandon.
Bull Durham.
Bull Durham.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking in the 90s, he was like bona fide A-list, right?
My point is that he got to work and witness firsthand the way first-class directors work.
Yeah.
My point is, don't think you can't learn as much by being on sets with like talentless directors because the learning curve is the same. He learned what to do. I learned what not to do.
Right.
Yeah. For sure.
You know, and that's what it really comes down to. So, when you know how to set up a show, now I need in this scene for Walter and Guido to do this, then she comes in and do that. Now, how can we do that in one shot?
Yeah.
That's not my fucking job. That's the DP. That's what I want. I need that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever. And then we figure out how to do it. But, you know, here, we're just under a fucking different system. That's changed. That's talking about fucking bowling. This is frustrating me. It's fucking sick.
All right.
We're near an hour, though.
Are we?
Dude. This is fucking flown by. We're not going to waste Vittorio's time with five questions. Also, no. I didn't write them down.
We're
not going to do five questions of Vittorio?
I can't remember Milanus' question. Can you?
There's probably going to be a lot of cutting.
It's not
No, I don't cut anything.
I can check with him. No, no, this is going to go up as is. Unless you ask specifically.
Yeah, no, it's funny you should
mention. I still have five questions. Right?
It's funny. Yeah. I can definitely find the other four.
Keep talking for a second. I'm going to check with John.
I can find the other four. We'll fucking find out the question from John.
Are we still on the air?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I am such a fan of this new app.
What is it?
Are you literally plugging an app right now?
Yes.
It's because it works for now. Like I'd say, we were late.
Yeah.
I had to parking, right?
Yeah.
I just shut it off. I can't believe it.
It's
this new parking app.
Okay.
So like I put in 2 hours worth, right, in the meter, and 15 minutes before my hour is up, I will be notified.
That's awesome.
And I just like punch in another. Whatever, half an hour, let's say.
Hear that, Keith? There's an app
you can
lets
add,
you know.
Yeah, I know. It's really cool.
You can add money from your phone?
Well, on the credit card, yeah.
Fuck, wow. I'm so stupid.
Keith got like 12 parking tickets in the span of 2 weeks.
No, get the app. You have one of these.
I have an Android, so I...
Oh, well, same thing. You can
ideally
get the app.
You should,
but
should
you
be
have
there.
You have a car? You have a vehicle?
Yeah.
Well, you want to get
this
thing.
Which you get tickets for all the time.
They charge you 40 cents, though, for every...
Oh, whatever.
But it's better than $40, right?
Yeah. That's why I have my little piece of paper folded up here. I'm fucking super old school to remind me.
See, I'm good for another hour, but in 45 minutes, I'm going to be notified. It's so cool.
And then you plug in the money.
That is one of the best things ever.
Listeners of the podcast will fucking...
I should have drank some wine, though, instead of beer, right?
That's what I asked you. I don't know what they would have had.
I'm trying to remember Milanos' question. Milanos' question was it... No, Kyle's question was nonfiction. Oh, fuck. I could. It would take me a few minutes to...
I just asked you, by the way. You know, I don't know if you know. You know I want to do a film about you guys, right?
About which guys? Me and Keith?
You guys do.
Keith and I?
Comedians.
Oh, okay.
I was like, fuck.
Well, you can get involved.
Yeah. Not a comic.
Are you going to have the comics play themselves? Because that would be a train wreck. I don't think you should do that.
This is an idea.
It
could be like Freaks. You ever see Freaks?
In my discussions with Guido.
Have you ever seen Freaks? You know the old movie, like it's silent. It's not silent.
It's not silent. It's an old horror movie.
It's called
us.
Freaks, and like it's a sideshow. They're sideshow freaks. They're carnival freaks, and they play and it's actual freaks in the film.
There's the weirdest fucking thing in this movie. There's a real... I forget what they call him, like an inchworm kind of character. No arms, no legs.
Just like a stump of
like,
a man.
Yes, a stump of a man.
There's a head, there's a torso.
1920s, 1930s kind of stuff.
20s, yeah.
Yeah, like really awful sound quality, black and white. When he lights the cigarette...
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah, like so he just he worms up.
A cigarette with he has no limbs and he
no limbs. It's all with his mouth. Like balances the cigarette, puts it over there, opens up the mouth, the matchbook, pulls out the matchbook. It was a matchbox at the time. Strikes the thing, holding like lays down the thing, picks up the cigarette in his mouth and lights it. And it's just like this long shot, and you're just watching it, being like, "There's no special effects. This is a guy with no arms and no legs, lighting a fucking
cigarette."
Most
fucked up part. What's not in that scene? Him rolling the cigarette. Him rolling the cigarette.
Is that an outtake?
God, that's
like
awesome.
It's not in this. It's not in that scene. He actually rolled his own cigarettes too.
What? That's fucking ridiculous.
But
how are we on this now? Oh yeah. So I'm just saying. So you take that model where you use real freaks and use real comics, except it might be harder to work with real comics than real freaks.
This came out of a conversation with me and Guido, and I said, you know what? I just thought, you know, this was like during the winter.
We should have Guido on at the same time.
It would be great. No, no.
We can have him later.
No, well, nobody would have ever gotten to speak, though, if Guido was on, too.
Yeah, because you got to say, shut up, now it's my turn to talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no. Massimo is going to hijack the entire podcast.
Do you know what? You know he's getting married, right?
Yes.
And do you know that I'm marrying him and Sue?
How are you doing that?
I'm the officiant. I will be the officiant.
Is that legally
yes,
allowed?
Yes, Quebec allows that. I had to sign some papers.
Really?
I have the power that day to marry Sue and Guido.
That's interesting.
Is that beautiful?
I got this thing on the internet once that made me like a reverend.
Oh, that's scary.
Like I printed it. But it's actually legally binding in a few states.
Oh, my God.
So
really?
In certain states, I can marry people.
Wow.
Yeah. I haven't tried it yet. Yeah. But
so it came up. Yeah, we just started talking about, wouldn't it be interesting to do some film about, you know, the struggle, the you guys go through. The
comedy thing?
Comedy thing,
it's mostly
drinking.
Mostly drinking? It's mostly drinking.
I sort of deduced that after a couple of shows
yeah.
watching you guys. But I said, yeah, I get like four or five of you guys, follow you guys around. I said, but I need a hook. I need a story. And I'm thinking it's something I'd probably be shot for very little, you know. Be
oh, yeah, there's plenty of stories. I mean, you could like it could be the whole thing could be like five get like focus on five guys, and they're all like sort of they're all trying to get like a spot like at the festival or something
yeah,
or like you know and
yeah.
Keith, what the hell are you doing, man? All right. So let's talk about let's plug something.
Yeah.
What do you want to plug?
What do I want to plug?
Yeah, what project? You were talking about, you were sort of like talking before.
Well, I'm working on a new play now. I should be done with the first draft by the end of the month. And it's a play that essentially encapsulates everything we just discussed.
The comedy stuff.
Yeah, your two main combatants in the play are a movie producer and a playwright.
Okay. So the struggles in the film industry.
Yeah.
Not the comedy thing.
No. The play set in a restaurant.
Right.
Actually, over the years, in my last three or four plays, I would meet regularly to have meetings and talk to actors and stuff at just around the corner from the Centaur Theater,
right.
Guido's cousin's restaurant.
Yeah.
DeFranco's.
Yeah.
So that's the setting of the play. And so your characters are essentially a playwright, producer, actors, actresses. They happen to be in rehearsals for a show, and in comes this movie producer from the playwright's past who has a deal for him. And through that, I get to say what I have to say about the business.
And what stage of development is this in now, this project?
Like I said, at the end of the month, I should be done my first draft.
Okay.
And it's going to be a very biting, hard-hitting comedy.
So it's comedic. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
So this is a bit of a. You're stepping away a little bit from your familiar.
No, this has nothing to do with being Italian.
No. So this is a bit different. It's a bit of a departure for you.
I mean, there are Italian characters like the way the owner of the restaurant.
Right. Of course. You
know.
Yes.
But no, it has nothing to do with. You know, I'm Italian Canadian and.
Right.
Respect me because I'm good. Or
yeah,
no.
you're getting sick of that, right? Yeah.
No. No, I can never get sick of that.
No, I'm just kidding.
No.
Please don't hurt me.
I'll hurt you after.
I'm Italian too. Don't forget.
I know.
It just doesn't come off.
No. It's just. I mean, I don't. I don't have anything right now that. I mean, I've explored quite a few themes in that.
Right.
Italian family thing. Now I want to. This has nothing to do with that. It's just. It's a play about actors and actresses.
Okay.
And director and playwrights. Yeah.
And then you said you had.
Oh, and then I will then get to a screenplay.
Right.
I want to complete about a man in his 40s who just lost his wife and is forced to struggles to make ends meet. With raising his daughter, 6 or 7 year old daughter.
Total change of subject. Have you seen the trailers for that production of Omerta, the film production?
Online, it's like a, I believe I did. Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Someone sent me a link. Yeah.
Did you watch the there was a thing that made a series of
I
the,
was in
TV.
The series.
You were in the TV series.
Oh yeah.
In the French language one, right?
Oh yeah, for the whole 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And did you so but like were you not asked at all to be involved in the film?
You know what's funny is that the writer director of the. Of the new movie, Luc Dion, I actually saw him last week at a theater opening. He had called me 2 years before he shot the film and said, "Would you be interested in reprising your detective character
right.
in the film?" I said, "Are you kidding me?"
And that's the funny part is that you play the of course you play the detective.
Yeah.
And in this movie called
That was one of the great. That was one of the best experiences I've had because it.
And that was and your roles. Your lines were all in French, right? Obviously,
it was all French.
All French.
I mean, the odd English line here.
Yeah.
But it was all French, and that's where I saw that. That was for the first time where I saw the difference between
the French
solitudes here.
Yeah.
The audience were following it. I still get stopped. People who recognize me, usually Francophones, you know. And they talk about the show or ask for an autograph or some sort of thing, and that's where I saw the difference between the English and the French. It's the work when it works, it connects with the audience. The English just seem to struggle with that.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but is Celine Dion's husband not in the film version?
Oh, in the film. I have nothing to do with the film.
I'm just asking.
I believe he is.
It's so weird. Like, the first time we're watching the trailer, someone's like, hey, look, it's Rene. What's his last name? Rene?
Angelil, yeah.
Rene Angelil. And I'm like, no, it's not Rene Angelil. And then they came back. I'm like, holy shit, why is he in this movie?
Monster, yeah.
How did that happen?
I have no idea. I think she's making a billion. An hour.
Yeah. It's something insane. Like, I think it's close. Maybe not a million. Maybe like 5 million.
No, she's making. Yeah, well, she's rich. Let's just say, yeah.
So, Vittorio, guess what we have ready now? Five question segment.
Let's go, man. Let's go.
Let's do it. Five questions with Vittorio Rossi.
Five questions with Vittorio Rossi.
Grumpies.
You guys are right. Fun, man.
And Lou Prima's back on again. Boom, let's do it.
Yeah, all right, okay.
Can I hit something? Like, can I break something before you go?
No, preferably okay, not
you
at the bottom.
You want.
I'm going to volunteer.
As long as it's not my thumbs or legs.
I'm going to volunteer Walter's face.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's fine.
All right, go.
I feel like my nose is too straight.
We need to start getting, like, some... These girls just wandered in. It's okay.
You know, just in case, I got to, you know... I was at. Have you ever been to a Guido's? Not Guido, our Guido, Cocomelo. Guido, you know Guido Grasso? You ever been to his restaurant?
Oh, yeah. I ended up there one night. It was ridiculous.
I was there on Sunday. He ended up. I was there to meet my good friend Juan Lee, who's in town shooting a film.
This is great.
And lo and behold, you know, Guido comes with his girlfriend, and Mark was there with his girlfriend, this other girl.
Yeah.
And we were sitting outside, and there was this other family there. At first, I thought, wow, they look Italian. They seem, but they're not. But there was this beautiful, absolutely stunningly beautiful woman.
Right.
Vittorio Rossi.
Looking at me.
Plugs this woman. Wait, that sounded wrong.
I don't know if she'll be listening to this, but I told Guido at the restaurant, he said, which, by the way, he did say, she does come here quite often.
Okay.
Oh, I think I might even know who this is. I think she might have come there the night I was. I think I know who you're talking about.
Dark?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I think I know who you're talking about. She's like, she's not Italian, though.
She's not.
She's, I think Armenian. Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Are you serious?
I saw her. She came with her friend.
Vittorio stood up. He was
now
so
we
excited.
Oh, yeah.
Dark?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah.
But she kept, like... We were meant somehow to connect.
Yeah, no, she's gorgeous. Yeah,
I don't know if she's a podcast.
No, but I was going to say she's smart.
She's smart. Yeah, whatever. But like, yeah.
No, see, you're going to get in trouble with
that. I know. Right? Yeah, probably.
See, I'm not. Yeah, I said, okay, cool.
No, I don't. Good for her for being smart, though.
Let's go with the five questions.
Five questions.
All right, five questions. This is how we close off the show. It's what we do is we ask three kind of generic questions that I thought up one time, and then. We ask a fourth question, which was asked to you by the previous guest. The previous guest gets
John Milanos, who you know.
John Milanos.
You know John, right?
He's
John,
a comic.
Stand-up comic. He's a Greek guy. The drug dealer?
Yeah.
No.
Does he deal drugs? Because he fucking never told us.
Totally,
no, he never told
but
us.
But you know John.
Totally
John was,
if
John
he was,
was
a drug
there last
yeah,
night.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
If he was a drug dealer and we recorded the podcast
joking,
I would be upset.
Totally joking.
John calls out – Vittorio Rossi calls out former guests. Okay, and then
the fifth question is a question that you get to ask the next guest.
Who is
– We don't know.
We don't know. Okay.
So you don't know either. So
that's the fun part.
You get to ask a question forward.
Okay, cool. Let's do it. Let's do it.
First question, this is – I don't want to. This is not in any suggestion of your age, but I think this is the furthest back we've gone with what was your favorite childhood toy. So this is the furthest back we've gone with this question, I think, back in time.
But you don't want to draw attention to the age.
I want to draw attention.
You want to just keep saying it's as far back in time as
we've
ever
gone. As far back
in
time as we've gone.
I would have to say my favorite childhood toy was my set of Hot Wheels.
Oh,
good one.
That my sister Lucy bought me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because there's a big age gap between you and your sisters, right?
There's an 11-year difference between me and my first sister and a 8-year difference between me and my second.
So she got you Hot Wheels, like with the loop? Was there a loop?
Yeah.
Nice,
oh my
nice.
God, my father couldn't stand it. But that was, I would have to say, that was my favorite toy.
Cool.
That's
a good one. Good
and I would say, even still, I used to, when I was a kid, every now and then, it was a retarded game. I said retarded.
That's okay.
Ridiculous game that we played with Hot Wheels, where we would buy like the dollar store Hot Wheels, because the good Hot Wheels you wouldn't buy. And we had one of my dad's like steel mallets, and shoot it through the loop, and then the other kid would try to bring the hammer down on the car.
Oh my god, you guys were mean, man.
They were crappy cars.
But it was only with the cheap ones. Like, none of the nice cars or whatever else like that. So it's like one kid like shoots it through the loop, and the other kid's like, slam! Like, slamming down.
I love those Hot
Wheels. A lot of real good parental supervision there.
No, man, we were...
Question?
Keep in mind, I grew up in my parents' house, whatever else like that, where we had a pool table in the basement, so we were like hustling pool at like 8 years old. Like, it was ridiculous.
Question the second.
The most fun you've ever had, like, of recollection.
Apart from that time with Shannon Doherty.
Oh, God.
Hey-o.
Hey! I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
The most fun I've ever had. Oh, my God.
This is always a tough one. Like people always are like, shit. It's tough. It's hard. We've had, while you think about it, I'll just fill the dead air. We had the...
No, don't do that.
Well, I was thinking about it.
No, don't fill the dead air.
No, okay, don't fill the dead air. We'll just let it... Let's enjoy the tunes in the background.
I'm actually very interesting to watch as I'm thinking. I've been told that.
How's that? This is an audio...
I don't know.
There's a lot of scratching and stuff involved?
No, it's just a thing.
He has a process.
Right.
In my life or in the last few years?
Whatever.
My whole life.
The most fun you ever had that you can like recall. It could be a thing when you were like 15 or whatever. It could be last week. Could be illicit. Right. Could be like wholesome. Whatever.
But you're talking about pure
fun.
Pure fun.
Okay, well, I can't say, though I enjoyed the opening nights of my plays, even when I sensed they were successful, because there's always some sort of tension there.
Right.
Because, you know, you're sort of put on the spot in a way. I would have to say when I flew to L.A., to be with my good friend Ron Lee and his wife and kids, but more to the point, to see four Bruce Springsteen concerts during his reunion tour.
Oh, that's kick-ass.
In the same leg of a tour, you saw four shows.
Four.
Well, yeah, it was in L.A.
That was just L.A. That leg of the tour, I actually saw him.
He did four shows just in L.A.?
He did four in L.A. He actually was the first musical act to open the new... Staples Center.
Oh,
right.
I'm sure they're all sold out.
Lakers, yeah. Play. This was in 1999. I'd seen that tour four times in L.A.
Wow.
He skipped Montreal. I saw him.
Was that with the E Street Band?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, obviously. I don't think he's ever... He had the solo career, but most
he's toured without the E Street.
Saw him in Albany, Madison Square Garden, Toronto, Ottawa, that whole tour.
Big
but that first, those first, that, that.
Was that the tour kickoff or like?
No. He was already on tour for like a month or.
Does he have something against Montreal, by the way? Because he's not doing Montreal.
No, it has nothing to do with him. It's
but this, because I'm going to go see him in Toronto in August.
Me too.
You're going?
I'm going.
Put it up.
Yes, brother.
Me and Vittorio are going to see Bruce Springsteen in Toronto.
It's on a Friday, you know.
Yeah, Friday night. Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna
God.
I have a hotel room because I'm going for Fan Expo, right? I'm gonna be there for a few days.
What's the weekend?
It's the first time I'm seeing. It's the first time I'm seeing Bruce
Friday
Springsteen.
Friday the 24th. First time you're gonna love.
Because me and Sophie might come.
Saw this tour, by the way.
It's good.
In Albany, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
Awesome,
all right. So we're like me.
I would have to say that.
Let's plug us hanging out in Toronto.
Nice. I might be in Toronto that weekend also for Fan Expo.
Yeah.
I was like. The funniest is I realized Springsteen and the E Street Band were on tour in the most fucking roundabout way. I listened to Little Steven's Underground Garage all the fucking time.
It's a good show.
Like, and because he also posts all of his episodes up on the website. And then, like, they took a hiatus, and I was like, why is there a hiatus? Oh, the E Street Band is back together again. Like, but it was just sort of, like, the most convoluted, like, oh, I guess Springsteen's on tour. Like, because his guitarist's radio show wasn't
right,
on. And I was
right.
Super convoluted.
Too much.
So that's going to be fun. It's going to
be
good times.
The third question is...
third question. We're still doing questions.
Super easy. Your favorite drink? Well, it's not super easy, but it's super short to answer, I guess. Your favorite beverage? Doesn't even need to be alcoholic. We've had a guest answer with a non-alcoholic beverage if you're, like, really into Faygo or Fanta or something.
These are not easy questions at all.
Oh, come on. Drink isn't a hard question.
I can answer it.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to have to answer in two parts.
Okay. Go for it. This is interesting.
When it comes to drink, okay? Why, when I'm eating, right. I like wine.
Right. Do you have a preference of wine? Like, do you have like a brand or anything? Or are you just like, a good wine will do?
Is red a brand?
Well, red's close enough.
But like, do you still make... Do you drink your own often? Or?
I have my own... I do make my own, yes.
Right. Yes, and do you drink that often, or do you buy?
I'll at dinner time. Yeah,
it's dinner at the home.
When
the way
Guido
comes
over,
drink
you should
wine.
Come over sometime. You know, and
well, I was trying to angling to get to do this at your place.
It's true.
Yeah, that's
been there.
I have, and
there.
It was great times. It was that Guido was there, and it was good despite the fact that Guido was there.
Well, we're gonna do it again this time.
Yeah, but like, no Guido next time though.
No, but we gotta bring that girl from.
We'll get that girl over, yeah.
We'll get the Armenian girl.
Get the Armenian.
She's listening. Drop me a line. Keep that 9to5.cc.
That was such a weird night, man. Yeah.
But now, if you're talking about drink, okay?
Okay. So wine with a meal.
So I always favored, in terms of alcohol, I've always favored vodka.
Okay.
Anything.
Vodka, anything.
Or straight up, but it's always got to be nice and cold, the way the Russians or the Poles are served it, okay?
Yeah.
I did Paradise by the River, my play.
Right.
And who turns me on to whiskey? Scotch, particularly. Single malt. Who turned me... Not an Irishman, not a Scotsman, not an Englishman. An Italian.
Wasn't Guido, was it?
Tony Calabrese. No, he doesn't drink
no.
whiskey.
No.
He's primarily a wine drinker. Tony Calabrese.
Okay. Right. Who's
got an amazing collection of whiskeys at his of scotches at his home.
The night that you showed
and
up,
I am so into the you know like the
it's
the
a game
scotch.
Changer. It's a game changer.
Oh, I no, totally
denied. I don't know if that answers your question,
but I would
it
say
does.
Wine,
scotch,
and definitely water after the workout.
There you go.
Yeah. No. Fuck scotch, dude. I hate it.
Oh, you don't like.
I drink gin the way people drink scotch though, like.
Ooh, I make really.
I have like easily 7 or 8 different varieties
he's
of gin.
He's a gin snob.
Yeah,
if that's possible.
Yeah. Like the most way people are like blah 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 this scotch. I'm like this gin.
Really?
Like, yeah. My girlfriend and I are both huge gin drinkers. Which
nice.
Is funny.
He's half a limey though.
Yeah. half British, half German, so it's gin and beer.
So that's why you can't appreciate like a fine scotch.
You're like nope.
Right.
No, but it's funny though because the like gin is usually something that people get fucked up on.
I know.
But like I can drink gin like Walter can attest, like fucking water.
You could hold Keith holds his drink pretty well in general.
But also gin is one of all the like hard liquors, gin is the one I hold like a machine. It's like ridiculous.
Really?
I can have like 7, 8, 9 gin sodas because I find tonic dilutes the taste. Like a gin soda, which is basically just gin and a little bit of fizz. And I'm just sort of like, oh, it's okay. I've only been drinking gin. I can still have a nice conversation. People are like, no, gin should fucking put you on the floor. You should have to peel you up.
You know, I don't mind the gin and tonic once in a while. But when I do have a martini, I do prefer it with vodka. But I don't mind the
gin martinis
and tonic
are amazing. Slow gin martini when it's made with slow berry, it's awesome.
Interesting.
Okay. So, now let's get to question the fourth.
Question the fourth is from John Milanos.
We figured out what John's question was.
Yeah. We tracked it down when I was not on the podcast for a couple of minutes. That's what I was.
Yeah, no one noticed.
The question was, if you die. Or when you die, I suppose. It's inevitable.
Or if you ever die.
Unless Vittorio Rossi...
I have a contract. Yeah.
When you die, I suppose, at the inevitability, turns out that there is a God. However you want to view the God as a Christian God, as a benevolent being, as a whatever else like that, not a religious question. What would you like him to say to you? Like, what's the first words out of the...
This was totally John's question.
This is Milano's questions, yeah. So, like, what's the first words out of the being that is in charge of things, words to you when you get to the afterlife? What would you like it to be?
I would like him to say...
Ow.
That...
I heard that.
I appreciated how you gave it your best shot.
That would be like the ultimate sort of fucking payoff.
Because we're imperfect. I said, you know what? Given that fact, you gave it your all, your best shot in everything you did.
One up on this. That's a really good answer.
That's an amazing answer. Like, really, imagine that kind of validation. You'd be like, fucking God says I gave it my best shot. That means I really did give it my best shot.
Because coming from that standard,
but wait for
it. Yeah.
But almost in the same level, God says, "Hey, Vittorio, how's it going? You remember that Armenian girl that one time? Here she is."
I thought you were going to go more mundane. If it's just sort of like you get to the afterlife.
Just remember that.
You get to the afterlife and God is like, "Do you remember the breakfast you made June 21st, 1989? It was the best breakfast anyone ever made, ever." And you're like, "Yes!"
What line of work do you think she's in?
Modeling.
I don't know what answer
I
could give.
I don't think she was a
model. No,
she was like, it was something like kind of like regular. I think she was like a teacher or something. Like,
Oh my god, can you imagine? Like, I'm always fucking blown away. There was a gym teacher in my high school who was super hot, and I'm always like,
What was his name?
Huh? Her name.
What was his name?
Her name.
I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Am I right?
I'm always like, you have to know that you're stunning. You're like willingly putting yourself into an area where there's a bunch of like pubescent boys.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I mean, like, obviously, like, no, none of us are gonna have a chance with her. But like, there's zero.
14-year-olds rarely have chances with 28-year-old women.
Yeah. Like, she was a gym teacher though, so she was like, what, like 22? I don't know. How long does it take to become
still,
a gym teacher?
Still not legal.
Whatever. But either way, and it always fucking blows my mind where I'm just sort of like, get another job. Like, teach elementary school or something where the kids don't know better. I'm like, these boys are like having these thoughts, having these impulses. Obviously, they're going to be about you. Like, there's
just
hot girl walks down. Yeah. You have all these kids who are like still getting hair in places where hair wasn't before. Fucking heads snapping around.
Yeah.
Bullshit. All right.
Here's where it gets exciting.
God damn it, Walter.
Question the fifth. This is where you get to ask any question you want to our next guest, whoever that may be.
We have two, three hours now?
We're at 2.5 hours?
I believe we're hitting hour number four.
I think we're at the average length of one of your plays now. I think
we're trying
pretty
to
pretty much. We're act one.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry. That was a joke. Please don't.
Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet is going to hold nothing to this podcast.
Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet. Is that what you said?
Yeah,
that's a nice film.
Oh, I fucking love that movie.
Isn't it amazing?
It's fantastic. He actually read the script.
Or the play, I should say.
Yeah,
that always helps with Shakespeare.
He read the script and clearly like loved the script. Like, I thought his Hamlet, I think, is one of like the, basically, if you want to know how to play Hamlet, you play like him. He's like not too whiny. He's like not too.
The character
like,
shouldn't be whiny.
Yeah, I know, but is often portrayed.
I know. Oh, we got to talk.
Ethan Hawke's Hamlet.
I'm here talking to you. Regard you have for me as a playwright, because one of the seminal books in my life that I read about playwriting is called The Heart of Hamlet.
Okay.
Subtitle is The Play Shakespeare Wrote by Bernard Grebanier. Okay. It's out of print, but I found, when I was lucky enough to find one at one of these, 10, 12 years ago, bro, it opened up my mind about the misconceptions of that play. It's unbelievable, because it goes down into what the text actually shows as opposed to your misinterpretation. Anyway, we'll talk about that later.
So
my question to the next guest.
Your question to the next guest. We have a couple people on the... I would fucking love...
So I have no idea who this next guest is. My question would be...
We just enjoy these sweet tunes. We've had the best background music on this fucking podcast of all time, I think.
What? My question... Oh, God. My question, okay, fuck it. My question is, what do you feel?
Oh.
How do you feel? What are your thoughts?
You're singing this is Bruce Springsteen lyrics now, right? It's like,
what do you feel?
Canadian film and television.
Oh,
that's
English,
fair.
English language.
English language, Canadian film and television.
How do you feel about
English? English language of Canadian film and television.
Nice.
I like that.
I like it too.
I think it goes well with the
so that way you have
show.
A different opinion, maybe than mine. And
probably
that way
won't be, but it could be different.
We'll see, because I'm not the only one complaining about this.
Right. Especially considering that we have a couple, like two or three different options, I think, who are going to be our next podcast. I think there'd be all three of them would be kind of like fun. All right. This was Go Plug Yourself, episode 16? 17?
Amazing.
I don't even know. With Vittorio Rossi. We'd love to do this again. Possibly.
Did you have a good time, Vittorio? You could maybe give us
totally. I had no idea it was going to be this much fun. I really didn't.
I was trying to tell you.
The beer was very good.
It was a good beer.
I love this atmosphere. I love the music in the background.
Yeah, it was good.
I love the fact that I'm a superior being to Guido.
I thought you were going to say that I love the fact that I'm a superior being than the two hosts.
Which would have been true as well. I would not have had a problem with that.
Fair.
Guido. You know what? I love that kid. I really do.
He's a good guy.
He's a really good guy.
I'm glad he's laid off the caffeine.
Yeah, he doesn't need it, though. He doesn't need it.
No, God, no.
He's just born.
Born speedy.
And he wakes up, like, on the fourth speed.
You sometimes worry that Guido's just going to punch you just talking for no reason. He's just so animated.
Is this podcast material?
Yeah, we should have Guido on.
Anyway, I want to thank Guido.
Is Guido doing it?
No, yeah, we're still going. We shouldn't be, though.
I just want to say I had a great fun. And anytime you want me back on.
That was awesome.
And I will come. And I will have the T-shirt that promotes you guys.
Right.
Oh, shit, we got to make that T-shirt.
You'll have the T-shirt. You'll have the Armenian girl.
We're going to make...
You'll have Shannon Doherty.
You and I need to talk about what the T-shirt's going to be.
Right.
Because there's going to be a T-shirt.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
That was fun. You're dead and fucking with legs like a boot. Why did you get your ball? Hey, I can't even fucking see your mind.
Hey everyone, it's me again, wasting your time at the end of the podcast where it doesn't matter anyways. Look, if you're a fan of the show and the site in general, please take the time to like us on Facebook. We are number9to5dotcc, 9to5.cc on Facebook. And also follow us on Twitter. We're @number9to5cc on Twitter. So and also be sure to check back on the site for something on Mondays, probably. We have Zombies and Loathing After the Bomb usually on Tuesdays. We have a new comic in 9to5 Illustrated every Wednesday, a new podcast every week, usually on Thursday. It's either going to be a 9ES or a Go Plug Yourselves. And on Fridays, we have Fine Arts with either Sophie and Scott. And, you know, maybe John will even contribute one of his mega articles at some point, too. You can only hope. All right, thanks.
9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you? Thanks for listening.